Welcome to the Startup Dentist Podcast. I'm your host, Stephen Trutter. After over 800 plus successful dental startups, I'm here to share everything I know about starting a profitable and purposeful dental practice with you.
All right. Welcome back. If you are thinking about becoming a practice owner, and one of those big mental roadblocks is, man, what do I do when I leave my associate position? What happens to that income? Where's that leap of faith? Then you definitely want to check out one of my most recent episodes where I have an interview with Dr. Carly Sells. She is one of our Ideal Practices clients. She took a leap. She's doing so well. She's killing it. But really kind of think about the mental side of things when it comes to, oh boy, I'm leaving my associate position. The golden parachute is gone. What happens? What do I need to do? So you're going to hear from her, not only the mental side, but like what she did to continue to grow her practice, what she's done, what she did to launch her practice very appropriately. So today we're going to take a left turn. When I was growing up, there was, I used to watch, Bugs Bunny and all these, and he would do this thing where he would tunnel underneath the ground and he would come up and pop up and he's like, oh, I went the wrong way. I should have taken that left turn at Albuquerque. I don't know why Albuquerque was such an important part, but today we are going to take that left turn, at Albuquerque, because we're going to dive into all things when it comes to acquiring a practice. And here's why, because we have started, we guide clients becoming an associate dentist, becoming practice owners, whether it's a startup or an acquisition. And I talk so much about startup because that was, kind of the backbone of what we've done here at Ideal Practices. But over the last few years, we've had a lot of associates approach us and say, I don't know what I need to know about buying my first practice. I don't know what happens after I buy a practice. And we said, wait a second. There's a lot of guidance on the financial side, but really what happens after? What are the common pitfalls? What happens like, okay, I buy a practice on Friday. What happens on Monday? I don't know how to run a practice. So today we're going to dive into the common pitfalls of buying a practice, the due diligence that you need to do to making sure that you actually buy the right practice for you. So grab your notebook and let's make this dream practice of yours a living and breathing reality. All right, folks. I love practice ownership. And while this is the Startup Dentist podcast, I want to talk acquisitions because they can fail miserably. And what I see is there's so many dentists that just automatically jump into acquisition without really knowing, like, what do I look for? What do I do? I've never ran a practice before. I have zero ownership experience. And I'll peel back this onion a little bit more as we get deeper into this topic. Here's the thing. An acquisition and a startup are not wildly different. What I mean by that is the approaches are not wildly different. Yes, in a acquisition, you're probably not doing a floor plan and you don't have a contractor in most cases doing a full build out. But a lot of the other foundational concepts of things like demographics, financial health, systems, protocols, insurance elements, patient growth, marketing, they're all there, folks. They're there whether you're doing a startup. They're there if you're buying a practice, because you're not going to buy a practice and say, all right, cool, everything's fine, hunky-dory, and not actively go out and get more patients. It's not what you do. So today I want to dive into a number of elements when it comes to acquiring a practice to make sure you have an understanding of, like, what do you need to do? Who needs to be involved? What do you need to make sure to make it a successful acquisition? So it's not just about buying a practice. It's really buying the right practice, for you. So now I know what's going on in the marketplace right now because, listen, our clients say this. I've been looking for a practice for years. Yeah, that's a reality. I think that's why so many associates end up doing startups is because what is the inventory of practices that's available in a given marketplace? There is the corporate dentistry that's going in and buying some of the bigger practices where you're not going to compete in that environment when it comes to how they purchase practices. My bunny air quotes here, the street deals that get done, usually practices are selling for a percentage of collections. That could be anywhere between 80, 90%, maybe 100% of collections. that's your street deals. That's your doctor-to-doctor transactions in a marketplace. Now, there's some variance in there based upon specialty and you know, ad backs and financials, but I'm just giving you kind of a broad range, 80 to 100%. In the world of corporate dentistry, they're not looking at just simply as percentage of collection. They're looking at things like EBITDA and multipliers of EBITDA, which is basically multipliers of profit. So where those numbers may end up, they could be 120, 125% or more of previous year's collections. They're in a different spectrum and what they're looking at. They're also chasing much different practices in a lot of cases. Hey there, Startup Dentist Podcast listeners. It's Stephen Trutter here, taking a quick break from today's episode to share something special with you. If you're dreaming of owning your own dental practice, then you need to get your hands on our Startup Dentist book. This isn't just any book. It's a 200-plus page comprehensive guide that covers everything you need to know to start a successful dental practice. From picking the perfect location to designing a patient-friendly office to building a marketing plan that draws in your ideal patients, we've got you covered. This book is packed with insider tips and real-world strategies. The other part that happens is, so we've got kind of the bigger practices. A lot of people want the middle practice, that practice that has an opportunity for growth. Maybe they're sending out a lot of procedures that you can bring in-house. Maybe it's an older dentist at the twilight of the career that doesn't have the same skill set. You're like, wow, diamond in the rough, I can bring this up. Great practice, good infrastructure, ideal location, opportunity for growth. Get in line, folks. Everybody wants that practice. There could be one, you could be one of 12 buyers. So how do you do that? How do you accomplish that? You know, in some cases, it's knowing people in the marketplace before practices go for sale. So it's kind of like, you know, certain where I live here in Florida and Tampa. Hey, listen, it's slowed down a little bit, but for the last few years, I would get these letters in my mailbox, no postage on them. And they were coming from local area real estate agents saying, I have a family coming from fill in the blank, New Jersey, somewhere up north or wherever, saying, if you're interested in selling your home, let me know. That's how buyers were able to buy homes in a lot of these neighborhoods. In our neighborhood in particular, it was like, you didn't even need an agent. You needed an agent only because the agent had all these buyers and not a lot of sellers. So we had neighbors moving and things like that without even really having a listing of their home. It was just like deals are being done. You may be able to find that opportunity to buy a practice in your marketplace as well. But a lot of people want that middle of the road practice. What gets left over is a lot of cases, I would call them the underperforming practices. We're going to talk more about that, but that's a lot of times what gets left over, and which is underperforming, hasn't been invested in, no marketing, maybe other challenges, very little, if no patient base, not a big fan of that, but we'll go into that in more detail. So today I want to talk about really like, what do you need to look out for when it comes to buying a practice? What are the common pitfalls to avoid? All right. So let's dig in here. So first things first is, as you begin to look at a practice, one of the first things you need to look at is obviously the financials. Now, this is where a lot of people get tripped up, is because the way I want to look at a practice is much different than most of the industry. Most people look at it as it's a financial transaction. Yes, you're buying revenues. What does that look like? But folks, you kind of look beyond that. And I would say most of you do. It's not just like, do the dollars and cents make sense? Dollars and cents make sense. Does the financial transaction make financial sense? Well, that's what an accountant does. That's, you know, what we do. That's part of our valuation process is like, does this cash flow, does this make sense? But we got to look underneath the hood here, folks, at this practice. You know, not just looking at what's happening there. I would also look at things like, what is the overhead of this practice? You know, what is the accounts receivable? What is the profitability? Because the profitability, you know, basically you need to confirm if the net income and the owner's compensation is sufficient to cover the loan payments and still provide you income. So it's not just about like, wow, on paper, this looks good. Beyond, does this transaction make sense for me? If I move into the practice and I need to service debt on this practice, do I still have an income that's available to me? So you need to make sure that you have a practice that you really understand those intricate details from a financial perspective. That's where somebody like, you know, our team, accountants and things like that need to come into play to really look at the financial viability of the practice. You need to look at the patient base. I think where a lot of people go wrong is like they don't really necessarily pay attention to things like, you know, doing some chart audits and things like that. How many active patients, not just how many patients, how many active patients? Does it have more than 1,000 or 1,200 active patients per doctor in that practice? Is there a new patient base? Or what does the new patient flow look like? Demographics. This is where startups and acquisitions merge. You know, when you're doing a startup, one of the first things that we always do with our clients is one of the first things we kick off is demographics. Where's the right area? Trying to find the area, the kinds of patients and the abundance of those kinds of patients. So when you approach things from an acquisition, I think a lot of times there is a desperation that exists sometimes. I've talked to a couple of doctors. I actually had a conversation about 2 or 3 months ago with a doctor, and she had been looking for a practice currently for 6 years. Oof. I did ask, well, why not do a startup? And her answer was, well, you know, yeah, I wish I would have done that 5 years ago. I probably should have done a startup, which then led me to, okay, why not do a startup now? Do you want to waste another 6 years so that you're 12 years and not find a practice? And she had this practice she was looking at, and she's like, well, you know, I really think I want to do this practice. And there was like logistical challenges and things like that. And I said, this is not a really good practice. And she's like, yeah, I know, really kind of know that. I said, oh, can I just say it? And I said, does this feel like, is this desperation? And she kind of chuckled. She goes, absolutely. Don't be desperate. You don't need to buy somebody else's problems. So, you know, when it comes down to what's happening, where I'm leading with that story is this. She was just searching anywhere and everywhere for a practice in a pretty broad geographic area, probably not even understanding if the practice that she was going to buy beyond all the other challenges even had the demographics and the people that she would love to serve on a daily basis. So why would you buy a practice in an area without knowing, do I want to live here? Do I want to have my family here? Does the patient base that's in this practice and the surrounding area, is this a patient base that I want to serve? If it isn't, don't buy a practice in an area that you don't want to be, because I've seen way too many stories, way too many posts in a lot of different groups of doctors with this story. I have a practice. I've owned it for X amount of years. I bought this practice. I don't love this practice. I don't love my life. I'm sacrificing long commutes. My family's far away. All these different stories. I don't love being here. That's all preventable, folks, by doing this stuff, doing demographical analysis to really see what's happening. Also understand, like, what's the mix of patient base? Is it PPO? Is it Medicaid? Is it fee for service? Like, all these things you need to find out about the demographics of the area and actually the demographics of the patient base in the practice itself. Very, very important. If you're a general dentist, things like that, hygiene recall system, making sure that, you know, what's happening within that system as well. I talked about demographics. Look at the competition. Are there any structural challenges and things like that of the space, like access and things like that? Like in this particular case with this one doctor, there was like a sloped driveway and there was challenges. And she said, well, there's already dental practice now. But she said, if I want to do construction, I said, well, now you may open up a can of worms. If it's already been grandfathered in from a, let's say, from a code perspective, from a permit perspective, and it's on this, you know, built in 1980s or 90s where things were very, very wildly different, and a contractor comes in and says, I need to pull a permit, and all of a sudden an inspector shows up and says, this won't work. You just basically bought a practice that is ungrowable, that you can't grow, that you physically can't grow the space. So even the physical aspects you need to take a look at, the facility, the equipment, the age, and things like that. What other costs are associated with this particular transaction? Those all need to be factored into the equation of, okay, what can I live with today and what can I get financing for? Because your financing is going to be financing the purchase of the practice. And if there's a lot of upgrades that need to be done, can that work? Not only can it work from getting the funding, but does it work financially? Back to what do you need? What kind of profit is coming from the practice in order to service the debt of buying the practice and to pay you an income? The other things you need to really be looking out for is looking at the experience of the team. Where are the payroll costs within that? Usually you want to land somewhere in the range of about 25 to 30% of collections. Think about culture. That's going to be a tough thing. Transitioning a team is very, very tough. Systems, the treatment mix. I would say, does this practice have an opportunity for you to bring in more procedures? One of the common pitfalls I'll talk about in a little bit, and I'll just mention it here, is buying a practice where it doesn't fit you from a skill set. Bad fit. That could be a failure on your hands. I would also look at the reputation of this current practice. So this is where you're looking underneath the hood, like, okay, you've got the financials. Things are starting to check the box. Everything looks good. Things are starting to line up. Financially, it's going to be sound. Does this practice have a good reputation in the community? Look at the reviews. Hopefully it has some. Look at the presence within the community, the website, all these different elements, you know, within that marketplace to really make sure that's there. So what I would say is, and then lastly is, what's going to be the seller's role? Are they just gone? You buy them on Friday, they're out. You know, all these different elements are important. You need to have a transition plan. Now, depending on the size of the practice, you know, in a lot of cases, some sellers may stay on for a few months. My take on this is this. I'm sure my in-laws and my mother aren't listening to my podcast, so, you know, probably not. But, you know, just like family, and you know what? I think every family would probably attest to this. After a while, you've been here long enough. Time to go. I'm sure my mom feels the same way when I come in with my wife and my three daughters. I love when my mom comes in. After a while, it's like, need to go back. I love my mom. Sellers are like that. They're like the family where after a while, it's like, enough's enough. You know, some sellers may want to stay on for a longer period of time. So this is where you get into like, okay, they want to stay on board. Okay, what are you paying them or what are they expected to be paid? So now you're talking about some challenges that could present itself. I always say it's great to have the seller in there for a short period of time. I think if it's a one doc practice, obviously, that you're purchasing, then you don't need them in there for a long period of time. You need to help them help transition patients, help transition the team, help you get an understanding of the kind of lay of the land within the practice, where things are located, all these different elements. And I say after a few months, even maybe it's 60 days in some cases, after a few months, it's like time for you to make this practice yours. And that's a big thing is like, how quickly do you do that? Now, I'm not a fan of going guns blazing. That's a bad formula to ruin a practice transition. But if you're not going to have a practice that becomes yours, then you're just buying somebody else's stuff and philosophy and it'll never be yours. So there needs to be a transition plan after you open your doors to make sure that's there. And the other thing you need to make sure that you have in place is a non-compete. The last thing you need is this dentist to go, hey, cool. Thank you for my bump in retirement. I'm going to go a few over town, or I have another practice next town over, and I'm going to siphon some of those practices, some of those patients over there. Making sure that you have a non-compete. Any lender that's out there will require this as a part of the transition, and obviously you need to have all that information that's in there as well. So typically non-competes, you know, you need to have those in place to protect you so that those patients don't walk over to the selling dentist. All right, let's talk about a number of elements that can be common pitfalls. And I got a lot of stuff here. Here's one thing is overpaying for the practice. You know, if there's inflated values and things like that. Now, is there negotiations that can happen within practices? 100%. But if you're thinking about a 10 or 15 year loan, and let's say it's a practice and the purchase price can vary. If I'm in the, you know, that $700,000, $800,000 to $1 million practice and, you know, you're fighting over, something that's $15,000, for example, in terms of value of the practice. That's, you know, the way I look at it, that's like fighting over the paint color of a mailbox on a house you want to buy. Who cares? Paint the mailbox. $15,000 over the life of a loan, especially if it's a practice that you can grow, not really worth the fight, but there's a lot of things you need to factor into this. So when it comes to overpaying for the practice, there could be inflated asking prices. There could be not factoring in certain adjustments like car payment, family payroll, and all these different elements that could be in those practices. And then What you don't want to do is also pay a premium for a practice if there's not a potential for growth. In other words, like, wow, I bought at the height of the market. No, I don't know if there's an opportunity for me to grow this practice. So really understand, like, hey, where can you get some benefits that are in there? And again, back to valuation, an analysis and cash flow analysis of that practice to say, and having somebody that represents you. Okay, if I could talk about, like, from a 30,000 foot view, biggest pitfall is not having people on your side. Listen, brokers represent sellers. They may say, listen, I know a lot of great brokers, but you know, there's ones out there that tout themselves as, you know, dual representation. That's a hard pill for me to swallow. That's a hard thing for you to think about, but for you to understand. But think about this. Dual representation. They are paid a percentage from the seller to sell their practice. They are paid a percentage of the sale of that practice. Think about that. Do you think they're going to want to negotiate any dollar off the price of that practice when their income is directly attributed to the sale of that practice? Yes, I get it. Everyone's saying, well, if there's not a deal that gets done, then no one gets paid. Yeah, but if there's a lot of buyers. The seller is represented by the broker. You need to make sure that you have proper representation going into this. One of the things is looking at declining revenue or unstable revenue. I'll call this declining revenue. Where's the bottom? That's a bank question. As a former banker myself for over a decade, I could say this, that, you know, when we would see practices that were declining, it wasn't so much like, oh, it's declining. It's more, where's the bottom? Where does that land if there's declining revenues? The other thing is I call it the free agent year. So I always feel like I'm a sports person, football, basketball, baseball, love it. And more baseball, even though I played basketball in college, it's like baseball has always kind of been that sport. Like, I'm a St. Louis Cardinals fan, diehard, been to World Series games, all that good stuff. But it always felt like, you know, that player going into that last year of that contract, before they became a free agent, and they would hit the marketplace. They would have this incredible year. You know, it'd be like batting 300, hitting 40, 50 home runs and, you know, 100 RBIs. And I'm kind of dating myself here, you know, and I'm not in the, all the analytics of baseball these days, OPS and everything, but hang with me here, folks. They get in that free agent year and it's like, they know they're going to ball out that year because big payday's coming. This can happen in sports and things like that. Big payday's coming, free agent year. And if I can have a really great year, that will probably boost my value when I hit the open market. That's what happens with practices in a lot of cases too. All of a sudden, revenues go up in the last year or two of ownership with the previous owner. Interesting. Let's look at those numbers. Oh, wow. Tripled the marketing budget. Oh, free agent here. He or she's selling. They're getting ready to put that practice up for sale. So they're going to be they want to hit the market as a free agent to be able to get the top dollar. You got to look beyond that, folks. That final year or two could be artificially inflated based upon a lot of things that they're doing to boost the revenues of the practice. So don't get sucked in. That's a common pitfall is saying, whoa, look at what they did. Well, why did they do it? They were doing it to artificially boost value of the practice. That is not a good indicator, because if you're doing a doctor-to-doctor transaction, usually you're looking at how things are weighted and values of practices. So that last year, while artificially inflated, doesn't give a true indication of really what that practice done. You got to look at historical numbers. One of the common pitfalls is you hear this practice has 2,000 patients. It's only doing $1 million. No way. How many of those patients are active? You got to look at how many patients are inactive. Maybe there's poor recall systems, low case acceptance rates, like all these different things that are there. So the patient base could be of poor quality within that. So you really need to make sure that you're understanding what the quality of that patient base is. I would also look at, this one's going to be a hard thing to uncover in some cases, but looking at the team, if there's any team issues, team culture challenges, had they had a lot of turnover, are the salaries within industry norms? Is there like is it sustainable for you? If it's not, that's a pitfall of like unsustainability of like today's salaries for team members, family members that are on the payroll. Is there any toxic team elements that are in there? Because again, you're going to be new kid on the block. So, you may find this out very, very quickly. how you transition into the practice. So one of the common pitfalls is having a poor transition with the team. Listen, you're going to lose patients. You're probably going to lose team members. There's always going to be attrition. But it's having the systems to be able to bring on those right people, to be able to retain the patient base, but more importantly, grow the patient base. Other common pitfalls is buying a practice that requires large amounts of investment in the infrastructure of the space, whether that's lots of new equipment, it's supremely outdated in terms of the infrastructure, the space. Now it's like, wow, I bought a bit. It's like buying the home, putting on the renovations, and now the home isn't worth what you bought it for. That's exactly how this works in purchasing practice as well. The banks are only going to approve up to a certain dollar figure. So now you're going to be borrowing technically over the value of that practice. So, you may need to space those purchases and those investments out, to make sure, like, you know, what do you need to get in today? What can you do today to go into the practice? So avoid the practice where it's like, I want to go in and I need to renovate everything. You may not have the financials to do it. And if you do it, it could actually really hurt you from a liability perspective. And you're sinking too much debt into a practice without the growth, because you're going to have attrition of patients naturally. So, I'm all about like minimizing the investment into the space as much as possible. You can always do upgrades later. You can always spruce up elements. Just like, hey, listen, over time, you know, like you do renovations in a home, you can do renovations in a practice over time as well. The other thing is, like, I would call this the hidden liabilities. Accounts receivable that can't be collected and won't realistically be collected. Any outstanding debts or any compliance elements or lawsuits that you're not aware of. Or the seller, here's a big one that you need to watch out for, is you want to make sure the seller is not making promises to team or patients that you're not aware of. Like, oh yeah, that treatment, yeah, that's going to be on the house. Like, okay. Or a raise that's going to be provided to a team member, things like that. Like, if there's promises being done, like, you need to be aware of those, making sure, because when you take over the practice, you don't want to have these surprises that end up on your lap. Other pitfalls that I see in a lot of cases is the seller unwilling to stay on for an adequate period of time. Again, back to family. There's a happy medium that's in there. There's a balance that's in there. But I would certainly want a seller to stay on board for a certain period of time, especially if that doctor has been there for, you know, 20, 30 years. Wow, they've got some connections within the community. They got connections with the team, connections with the patient base. You want to make sure that is great. Poor communication of the ownership change, that can happen. If there's just poor communication with the team, poor communication with the patient base, where it's not like really done properly, where it falls to a point where it's like, maybe the patients and team felt like, wow, we just got had. Like, oh, doctor so-and-so left, and we weren't aware. Now they feel like they've been lost. Their team lost. Patients lost. And that then falls upon you, where all of a sudden you come in on day one, nobody knows, you come in, and all of a sudden it's like, where's everybody at? Team left. Everybody's disgruntled. They're unhappy with what happened. So you need to make sure that you don't have bad transition, and you avoid those transition risks. And I think one of the other things, and I'll leave you with this, is I would say ignoring the demographics and ignoring the competition and ignoring growth. You know, just like with a startup, we're trying to understand what's the saturation rate. You could buy into an area that's like just got a huge number of dental practices in the area, not analyzing what's an opportunity for housing growth within an area or just growth in general. Maybe this is a declining area. Maybe it's an area where a lot of people are moving out of, and all of a sudden you move into a practice and it's like, wow, this is not what this is going to look like tomorrow. And I would also say this, the biggest pitfall of any transition that I've seen is ignoring your vision. Folks, you know, I've had the fortunate opportunity in 20 years to work with thousands of dentists, and even a few recently all of our practice owners, I'm so proud of what we get to do with them here at Ideal Practices. But I've had a few over the years that I love their stories about, in reality, they bought practices and they don't love them, to be able to build a vision for themselves as a startup. And I'm not saying you can't achieve that with an acquisition. You definitely can. But I don't know if I've told this story here on the podcast, but anyway, I'm going to tell it anyhow. I was in the Midwest a few years ago, with a dentist, and he had owned a practice. I bought a practice from two previous owners. And I always said, I'm not going to talk somebody into a startup. And it was because I was there as a startup expert. And I got done and he said, well, talk me into a startup. And I kind of laughed and I said, well, tell me about your practice. He goes, I bought my practice. And I said, okay. And I actually pulled up his website. I said, this is you. He said, yeah, that's me. I said, it was like him in the middle with these two guys kind of flanking him on like the front page. I said, who are the two older gentlemen? I said, well, those previous owners that you bought from? Yep, those are previous owners. I bought from them. Cool. How long ago did you buy from them? He goes, 6 years ago. I said, awesome. How's everything going? Good. I said, all right, final question. How long did it take for you to fully implement everything you want to do with your team, the systems, everything internally into the practice? And he said, 5 years. It took him 5 years to do that. This is not a knock on acquisitions. This is a knock on not having a plan. 5 years is a long time. Successful practice, but you need to be very intentional in the first months, not 5 years of like making sure that this area aligns with me, my life, my family, long-term vision for the practice, the growth opportunity, long-term vision for my, your clinical skill set. Does this practice have, be able to do that? Making sure it's a practice that does align today. So I would say this, this is about not buying the practice simply for today, buying the practice for today and tomorrow. The personal elements need to be there. The due diligence within the practice needs to be done. There needs to be intention and a plan on a transition plan for the patients, for the seller with you and the team. All those things need to line up. So if we kind of look at this from a 30,000 foot view, folks, what I'm saying is, don't just look at a financial statement. And it's funny, I see these posts sometimes, and I'm in a number of Facebook groups as a sponsor. And I love when some of the doctors are like, hey, everybody, so here's a scenario of a practice. And it's like, here are the revenues. Here's a few things, a couple synopsis of like the practice. What do you think? And it's funny. It's like there's a few people that go, yeah, it looks good. Or no, that doesn't look good. And then a lot of us are like, I couldn't tell you. I don't know enough about that practice. So it's not a, just this financial transaction. There's a lot of transition specialists that are out there, and everything's more from an accounting perspective. And I have deep respect for a lot of people in that space. But what happens after you buy the practice? That's the big thing. That's when rubber meets pavement, folks. It's not just about the financial transaction. It's, okay, now that I bought it, what's my strategy for getting credentialed? What's my strategy for setting up my internal systems, my protocols? What are going to be my financial guidelines? How's my team going to be set up? What's my marketing strategy? How am I going to grow the practice? How am I going to connect within the community? Is this area the right area for me? These are questions that you need to be asking yourself when it comes to purchasing your first practice. All right, folks, spent a lot of time there on acquisitions. I'm going to spend a little bit more time next time on that topic as well. So that's a wrap. So if you want to learn more about, you know, acquisitions, is this the right practice? If you want to look at a practice, then go to idealpractices.com. There you can schedule time with one of our team members, one of our expert advisors, to have a strategy call, have a clarity call, more importantly, about like, is this the right path for me? So many associates, we have calls all day long with associates reaching out to us, looking at practices, thinking about startups, and really just talking about like practice ownership. And before you take that leap, have a call. Let's talk about this unbiased. Which path is the right path for you? Is it an opportunity for you to purchase the right practice? Let's have that clarity call. So you can go to idealpractices.com and you can schedule there. All right, folks, that's a wrap on the topic of the right acquisition and avoiding those common pitfalls. Don't forget to check any show notes for any and all links and resources that we talked about today. I got to get my glasses up for this one because this is my font here. It's too small. Next time, we are going to dive into even more details when it comes to an acquisition. And I'm going to have a special guest there because we're going to talk about the financials. Like, what are things you need to look at in financials? What are some pitfalls? Understanding financials, the behind the scenes elements that are there, all the key financial metrics that every buyer should understand before signing on those lines, and any kind of red flags when it comes to the financials. So I'll see you there. As we wrap up this episode, take a moment to picture yourself a year from now. Are you still in your associateship?
are you rocking it at your own dental practice, creating beautiful smiles and making a real difference? If that's the dream, it's time to chase it. Before we split, make sure to hit subscribe, drop a review, and give us your rating. It helps us keep bringing you the good stuff that you're into. Until we meet again, keep taking that next step towards your future practice. Here's to investing in your dreams and making them a reality.